early students said of her. She never seemed to tire. She was continually alert mentally and physically. Her cheerfulness never failed. Her patience seemed never exhausted. She had a keen sense of humor which frequently tided over difficult situations. I never knew her to use an unkind or a discouraging word to a student. Not only a superb and inspiring teacher, she was also a good Samaritan. Many were those she helped, a penniless student, a frightened young country girl coming to the university for the first time, the destitute family of a minister who was seriously ill. The recipients of her generous concern and self-sacrifice will never be fully known. And along with her teaching, she was in constant demand for lectures. Sometimes she lectured 4 or 5 nights a week, all winter, traveling from 50 to 100 miles, yet never missing a class at the university. She never took a Pullman. Curled up on the seat of a day coach, in later years, this habit served her in good stead. When she lectured for Liberty Bond drives in the far west, she always rode the day coach. It saved money, she said, and besides, she would not have been able to sleep in the luxury of a Pullman while so many of our boys were in the trenches. But her life at the university was not without vicissitude. During a real estate boom in the late 80s, she borrowed heavily from friends to make large investments in property in order to help more who needed help. And when the collapse came, she lost everything. And although advised to go into bankruptcy and thus pay off as much as she could of her debts, she sternly refused. For more than 30 years, until past 75 years of age, she walked instead of riding the streetcar. She ate the plainest food, dressed always in the simplest, most economical fashion, and no longer allowed herself the white at the neck and wrists, in order to save still more to repay the creditors, which to her glory and honor she was able finally to do. Strangely, at one period, she had academic troubles as well. A few disgruntled students circulated a petition for her dismissal from the faculty. And there were colleagues who resented her popularity, who felt she spent too much time lecturing away from the university. But she triumphed over all of these. Indeed, in the spring of 1899, the Minneapolis Daily Journal conducted a favorite teacher contest. Miss Sanford won third prize, but some of her friends and students contributed enough extra to make possible a trip to Europe. And she became almost a sensation on the voyage. All the way from Montreal to Liverpool, she gave readings and lectures on the ship. Attractive young girls were deserted by the male passengers, who sought instead this plainly clad older woman with her rare charm and magnetic personality. Even so, she was yet to weather another storm. The year after her return from Europe, she received inexplicably notice that she would probably be asked to resign the end of the school year, and this is a story in itself. There was such a storm of protest from former students, faculty members, and townspeople who knew and revered her that the matter was dropped. Despite the hurt of this episode, her devoted work continued, but her days at the university were approaching their close. In June 99, her last year as a member of the faculty, she was asked to deliver the commencement address at the university, one of the first women ever so honored in the United States. Deeply complimented, she delivered one of the best and most characteristic orations of her career, What the University Can Do for the State. Her words were memorable, and I quote, It is not some special genius conferred upon the few, but the wise gifts, the wise use of gifts common to all, that makes life rich and valuable. The moral of this for the university is plain, she said. It may, it can, it should give to the youth of the state this awakening impulse. Breathe into them this breath of life. Rouse them not to mere physical courage, but to the courage of high conviction, to give them aims, ambitions, purposes, which shall transform and transfigure their whole life. And after this valedictory, this farewell to the university she loved and had served so well, congratulations poured in. The university alumni presented a parchment which said, "We thank you for your service to the state of Minnesota. By your lectures, you have carried inspiration to thousands who've never seen the university. In all the state, no woman is so widely known and so generally loved and respected for your widespread and noble influence. The alumni will always revere you." As former President Vincent of the university was later to say thereafter, Miss Sanford was a woman who has retired and doesn't know it. She embarked upon a new and crowded career, incredible for a person of her 72 years, for she saw and thought beyond her time the issues of women's suffrage and women's right, of temperance, of education and opportunity for the Indians and for Negroes, of international relations, even the menace of communism in that time, and of religious faith, rooted in the liberality of her Congregationalism. She was the first woman ever invited to address the Grand Army of the Republic. And in that same year, the university's first dormitory for women was built and named for her, standing still as a landmark of remembrance to the students of today, as does the high school in Minneapolis bearing her name. Perhaps the occasion, the one occasion which made her known to the greatest number of women all over the country, was the address that she gave at the convention of the National Federation of Women's Clubs in San Francisco in 1912. And she spoke on the subject nearest her heart, the value of moral power in the schoolroom. Shortly before her 76th birthday, she made 18 addresses in 10 days and on her birthday lectured twice. And in June 1917, Carleton College of Northfield, Minnesota, presented her with the degree Doctor of More Humane Letters, and Miss Sanford was no longer in the curious position of being a college professor without a degree. America entered the war, Mariah Sanford threw herself into patriotic work with characteristic fervor. Though she was a woman 80 years old, the last full year of her life, 1919, was marked by perhaps the greatest variety of talks that she'd ever been called upon to give. Although her vigor appeared undiminished, by the end of that year, she was far from well. She rallied, however, and early in the spring of 1920, the Daughters of the American Revolution, of which organization she had become an honorary member of every chapter in the state, asked her to attend their national convention in Washington. At the opening session of the convention, Miss Sanford presented her apostrophe to the flag, whose ringing words you soon will hear. As she approached the stand, the audience saw a little frail old lady of 83. They expected to hear a small, weak voice. But as her first words rang out, the great audience was hushed to attention. Her voice retained all of its compelling beauty and its penetrating power. And at the close of this inspired address, she was given a prolonged ovation. The next day, she attended the convention briefly, and then a luncheon in her honor, from which she returned to the home of Minnesota's beloved Senator Knute Nelson, where she was an honored guest. On leaving her hostess for the night, she remarked, "I bid you good night on the happiest day of my 83 years." The next morning, April 21, 1920, they found that she'd passed peacefully away in her sleep. Her passing was mourned throughout the nation. Minneapolis Teachers League memorialized her in these words: "In her was the sense of beauty of the Greek, the love of law and order of the Roman, the integrity and fervor of the Puritan, the religious aspiration and devotion of the Christian, whose virtues she exemplified." At the University of Minnesota, at the last convocation of the school year, tribute was paid her memory by the entire school student body, and President Emeritus Cyrus Northrop, himself a legendary figure, spoke and said she carried in her heart the sorrows of universal humanity. Nearly 40 years have passed since her death, yet her memory, her influence, and her example endure. Truly it's fitting that in this, the centennial year of the state of Minnesota, we should honor the one woman whose glory still shines as does the eternal light of the North Star. And so the saga of triumphant integrity and inspiration, so appropriately summarized in the inscription on this statue composed by Dean Melva Lind of Gustavus Adolphus College: "Mariah L. Sanford, sturdy and resilient Puritan, whose perceptive mind and reverence for classic truth and beauty quickened intellectual life within the pioneer state of Minnesota and beyond its frontier. Educator, orator, civic leader, the best known and best loved woman in Minnesota."
Minnesota's carillon singers were organized in 1950 by Edith Byquist Norberg, who directs them still. She is musical director of Mount Olivet Lutheran Church in Minneapolis and associated with the MacPhail School of Music. The accompanist is James Vanock. Today the group will sing excerpts from a musical, The Legend of Paul Bunyan, composed by John Salisbury and Cappy LaFell. Rupert LaBelle is the narrator. Kenneth Peterson takes the part of the Indian chief. Incidental solos are sung by Carol Sastet and Helen Nelson. Minnesota's carillon singers presenting The Legend of Paul Bunyan.